familiar Brutus set down, but it's best to keep him with the press, so I cried, "To be sure, I remembered him well, and how had he been all these years?" He went rosy with gratitude at being remembered by the famous Flashy. "But here's another who's been counting the hours to see you," cries he. And there, emerging from a tent, came Giant Despair, dressed for a gypsy wedding, and I could only stand and gape. Bar Mangus Colorado, he was the biggest man I'd ever seen in my life, closer to 7 feet than six, and built like an overgrown gorilla. His enormous body was wrapped in a robe made of lion's manes, which covered him from the white scarf round his neck to his massive half-boots. He wore a black beard to his chest, horn-rimmed spectacles and a smoking cap, and carried a throwing spear in one hand and a straw umbrella in the other. To complete this bespoke costume, he had a sabre on his hip, a revolver in his belt, and a round native shield slung on his back. When he grinned, with a fierce glitter of teeth in the beard, he looked like a Ghazi on hashish. And then he spoke, brisk and high-pitched, his huge hand gently enfolding mine, and he might have been a vicar, welcoming me to the sale of work. "Charles Speedy, Sir Harry, used to be adjutant of the 10th Punjabis. Saw you once on the Grand Truck near Fetterpur. Oh, ever so long ago, but you didn't see me." "Then you must have been lying down in cover and wearing mufti," thinks I. My astonishment showed, for he gave a whimsical shrug and spread his arms in display.
"Sir Robert Napier likes me to dress native. Thinks it impresses the local siddies, bless 'em. I'm his political adviser, and at present your committee of welcome."
He gave another alarming grin, accompanied by even more alarming words.
"Can't tell you how glad we all are to have you with us."
Now, that was the very first intimation I had of the possible ghastly sequel to the mission I was carrying out simply to oblige an old school chum. Of course, you could interpret the words two ways, and I lost no time in putting him right.
"I ain't with you, delivering the messages, rather."
I nodded at the boxes which the coolies were unloading under the watchful eye of Twentyman and my bootneck sergeant.
"I hear it'll take 10 days to get him up to Napier by mule. How short of the ready is he?" "Tight, but one chestful of dollars should cover his immediate needs, and we'll get those to him inside 48 hours. Can't have his pockets to let when he meets the Ting of Tigray to arrange our passage through his territory. Napier's been waiting beyond Attacrat for days, but His Majesty's hanging back, scared to commit himself, likely. Theodore may be a long way off, but these petty rulers go in terror of him still."
He gave his great booming laugh.
"As political, 'twill fall to me to persuade King Kusai that we'll be the winning side, so the sooner we're southbound the better. You and I and Henty here can split a chest of silver among our saddlebags, with a couple of lead beasts. Hear that, George? You can stop scribbling and do something useful for a change." "'Tain't every day two such lions as Sir Henry Flashman, V.C., and the Basha Falaka shake hands," says Henty, pocketing his notebook. "You're good copy, Charlie, the pair of you. When do we leave, then?"
"After tiffin," says Speedy, "if that suits Sir Harry."
Henty laughed and said no wonder the Abs called him Basha Falaka, which means quick chief, and was their pun on Speedy's name. I was deciding he was a sight too quick for me. Here I was, hardly 10 minutes ashore, and I was being dragooned into the saddle by a crazy Goliath in Halloween rig to go tearing up country on a 48-hour gallop to Napier's command post. True, I'd sworn to Speedycut that I'd see his dollars all the way to Attacrat, but that had been back in Trieste, with the hosts of Midian prowling round, and now here was Napier's own political on hand to collect the dibs. And after that mention of being with them, I'd no wish to venture nearer the theatre of operations than I must, in case Napier got a notion to drag me into the stew. I know these bloody generals. I'd been there before. On t'other hand, I was well retired, hadn't worn the Queen's coat since China in 60, and I'd need Napier's personal kitab for a paid passage home. He'd expect me to call on him, and, offhand, I couldn't think of a good excuse for not doing so. Fool that I was. I should have told Speedy I was sickening for mumps, or pleaded my belly, or done any damn thing to stay at a safe distance from a campaign which, to judge